sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
On today's show, we're going to take a look at two different topics that our government and corporately controlled media, and some of our, quote, alternative media, are either omitting, distorting, or outright lying about, just as they did and still do concerning 9/11. And by the way, there is now so much research out there that proves beyond all doubt that the official conspiracy theory of 9/11 simply cannot be true. If you're not aware of this, please do some research. A good place to start is to read any book by David Ray Griffin on the subject. And also to go to the website ae911truth.org. That's the website of the now close to 3,000 architects and engineers who have examined the evidence. And again, that's ae911truth.org. Watch their two videos there, Blueprint for Truth and 9/11 Experts Speak Out. And that should really clear things up for you. But back to these two topics for today, which are the Parkland, Florida school shootings and weather modification. 9/11 and other false flag events are just one of the ways that we're being attacked, manipulated, controlled, and lied to. And I just don't see how we can survive and resist it all if we don't know what's happening. So let's start with the recent Parkland school shootings. And I want to say up front that I don't know what happened there. But I can tell you, just as with many of the other shootings, there's a lot of things that just don't add up. And we're going to talk about 10 of those today. And with the new media censorship, like removing videos, shutting down websites, and changing algorithms, so that online searches only take you to sites the powers that be want you to see, it may get a lot harder to learn what's really going on. James Tracy, whom I don't always agree with, but who recently wrote a very informative article called The Parkland School Shootings, Top 10 Reasons for Deeper Interrogations. So let's take a look at these top 10 reasons. Number 1, missing surveillance video. Ensconced in a locale boasting a $600,000 median property value, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School is among the most modern and well-funded in Florida. Like other schools throughout the state, the campus was equipped with a comprehensive video monitoring system of buildings' interior passages and exterior walkways. The Broward County School District is withholding video taken during the February 14, 2018 mass shooting at the school that could reveal exactly how the event transpired. It appears that some video may have been obtained by the Miami Herald, which posted it with the headline, quote, "Video shows blood-smeared floor, body inside Douglas classroom." The article has since been removed from the newspaper's website. So the videos, cameras, that sounds familiar with 9/11 and the Pentagon, where all the cameras have been taken and very little has been shared of them. Number 2, scripted lines. A Stoneman Douglas High School junior and ROTC member, Colton Hobb, who sought to participate in a CNN town hall broadcast on February 21st, claimed the cable network provided him with a list of scripted questions. He said, quote, "I expected to be able to ask my questions and give my opinions on my questions." Hobb explained to local ABC affiliate WPLG-TV, quote, "CNN had originally asked me to write a speech and questions, and it ended up being all scripted." Hobb said he was asked to prepare a speech and to ask about school safety and the prospect of veterans being employed as armed security guards in schools. The high schooler's ideas and queries were prohibited by CNN. After being told he had to ask a scripted question, Hobb decided not to attend the event. He said, quote, "I don't think that it's going to get anything accomplished. It's not going to ask the true questions that all the parents and teachers and students have." Number 3, manufactured dissent. Stoneman Douglas High students impacted by the event were rapidly mobilized by Democratic political leaders to advocate for the party's foremost rallying cries, strengthened gun control laws. News media, including CNN and state and federal Democratic Party operatives, including Florida representatives and former Democratic National Party Committee Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz, advised key Stoneman students in organizing the Never Again movement and arranging protests, including a lobbying trip to Tallahassee to meet with Florida legislators. Parkland, however, is represented by Democratic Representative Ted Deutsch, another staunch gun control advocate. And on a side note, I just want to add here that every time one of these events happens, it seems like more and more people go out and buy guns. And I was surprised to learn that many of my neighbors in rural Connecticut have guns. And one of the reasons they give for owning one is first for personal protection, but then the other reason that they say most often is that they don't trust the government. Number four, experts speak out. Those with military and school administrative experience have begun to step forward and question various troubling elements of the Stoneman Douglas shooting. For example, John Buchel, a militarily trained weapons expert, security expert, and school administrator based in Florida, tweeted at length about how Parkland differed greatly from his own experiences defending his school during an active shooter event. Number five, reports of multiple shooters. In numerous interviews, Stoneman Douglas students asserted there was more than one shooter in Building 12 as the event proceeded. Parkland student Jalen Martin claims the United States Secret Service visited the high school's campus weeks before the incident, altering the active shooter response protocol. Is this why Douglas School Resource Officer and Sheriff's Deputy Scott Peterson remained outside the classroom building as the carnage ensued? Another student claims she saw and spoke to alleged shooter Nicholas Cruz in Building 12 during the event. A Stoneman Douglas teacher told MSNBC, faculty were informed there would be an active shooter drill sometime during the spring semester, but were left in the dark as to the actual date or time of the exercise. I have two comments on this one. I've actually seen the video myself on YouTube where a female student says that she was walking in the school next to Cruz, the alleged gunman, when shots could be heard in other parts of the building. She reports that there were at least two shooters. You would think that the mainstream media would be all over this. But of course, they're not. And my other comment on this section is about the drills. And we know that drills were a part of many of the violent events that we've experienced since 9/11. On 9/11, there were many drills going on similar to what actually happened. In London, during the 7/7 bombings, the real event took place in exactly the same places and at the exact same times as the drills going on that day. So when drills are involved, we need to look deeper than what we're being told. Number six, crime scene demolition. Less than 2 days after the tragic shooting, Broward County School Superintendent Robert Runcie proposed demolishing Building 12, the crime scene itself. The Florida State Legislature almost immediately agreed to help fund the teardown. One must ask why, just hours after the brutal deaths of 17 youths, plans for evidence destruction and a new memorial are even being pondered. Stoneman Douglas will join a long line of mass casualty event scenes, including Columbine, Aurora, and Sandy Hook, that have been destroyed. Sound familiar? Sounds a little bit like 9/11, where all of the evidence in New York City, all of the debris of the towers, was shipped overseas immediately, so there was no way to examine a lot of the evidence for controlled demolition. Number seven, abandoned law enforcement protocols. On the afternoon of February 14, Stoneman Douglas School Resource Officer and Broward Sheriff's Deputy Scott Peterson heard gunshots in Building 12 and rushed there, but waited outside for 4 minutes as the massacre ensued. Broward Sheriff Scott Israel, who could not explain Peterson's behavior, acknowledged Peterson's inaction was captured in campus surveillance video and suspended the deputy without pay. Israel thereafter told the press, "We're not going to disclose the video at this time, and we may never disclose the video." Two additional deputies under Israel's command, Edward Fasson and Guntis Trahia, were placed on administrative duty pending further investigation. Both deputies participated in 23 calls for service to Cruz's home and may not have followed protocol. two other Broward Sheriff's deputies are under review for failing to further investigate repeated complaints concerning Cruz that may have prevented the shooting. In 2014, Peterson was selected by Parkland as School Resource Officer of the Year. Number 8, fight to establish official narrative. There's a very well-defined struggle to establish and defend the official government law enforcement narrative of the Stoneman Douglas mass shooting and prevent any questioning of this storyline. This campaign is being led in part by cable news giant and Time Warner subsidiary CNN. Alternative media have been banished from YouTube for sharing differing views and analysis of the Parkland shooting and earlier mass casualty events. A recent community guidelines policy change provides for the Google subsidiary to eliminate any videos it perceives as, quote, targeting the victims of tragedies, thus de facto censoring many important critical analyses of such events. On February 23rd, CNN directly petitioned YouTube to shut down a channel run by libertarian commentator Alex Jones, claiming that its alternative reportage and commentary on the Parkland shooting runs afoul of YouTube's policies. On Wednesday, YouTube removed a video from InfoWars page for violating its policies on harassment and bullying. CNN argued in a piece targeting, quote, conspiracy theories. CNN reporters then identified three similar YouTube videos from InfoWars and asked if they also violated YouTube's policies. The YouTube spokesman said the videos CNN sent were flagged to the policy team for review. Under YouTube's policy, if a user receives three strikes in a three-month period, their account is terminated. Such advocacy toward eliminating a media competitor and defending an official government narrative of such a controversial and still unfolding event is especially concerning. In another instance, Isaac Green, a thoughtful and popular commentator running the anti-school YouTube channel, who proffered an array of unconventional perspectives on Stoneman Douglas and political controversies, had all of his videos removed by YouTube. Shortly thereafter, Google locked Green out of his account entirely. Apparently, these people have never heard of free speech and the Constitution. We are in really serious times when the alternative voice cannot be heard and is being eliminated by the voice that represents the corrupt establishment. Number 9, FBI involvement. Ongoing internal investigations on law enforcement responses to the threats Cruz posed already reveal how the FBI, alongside local law enforcement, repeatedly failed to follow up on reports of the supposed assailant's unusual behavior, weapons ownership, and disturbing online media posts. The FBI's failure in this regard was condemned by Florida Governor Rick Scott and the U.S. Justice Department. The Bureau admitted an individual close to Cruz phoned the FBI's public access line on January 5th to report information concerning Cruz's gun ownership, desire to kill people, unpredictable behavior, and ominous social media posts. The party also stated that Cruz could likely carry out a mass shooting. The information was never forwarded to the FBI's Miami office and investigated further. Or was it? According to investigative journalist Trevor Aronson, throughout the so-called War on Terror, the FBI has been directly involved in cultivating terrorists through its network of informants and often encouraging their activities. Our nation's top law enforcement agency, traditionally focused on investigating crimes after they occur, writes Aronson, now operates more as an intelligence organization that tries to preempt crimes before they occur. But how many of these would-be terrorists would have acted were it not for an FBI agent provocateur helping them? Was Cruz manipulated to take up arms against his Stoneman Douglas peers, or was he somehow maneuvered to the scene? As observations of one eyewitness suggest, while other, more capable gunmen carried out the slaughter. And number 10, antipsychotic drugs. According to the Florida Department of Children and Families, Nicholas Cruz was receiving mental health services from Henderson Behavioral Health and accordingly taking medication for alleged psychiatric ailments. In 2016, Cruz's adoptive mother, Linda Cruz, stated that her son suffered from depression, ADHD, and autism, suggesting how Cruz was regularly consuming a cocktail of potent drugs that may have impacted his behavior and judgment prior to the shooting. The psychoactive drugs used to treat depression and ADHD have profoundly complex and potentially debilitating side effects when taken separately that are only compounded if administered in unison. These include agitation, hyperactivity, psychosis, and are further linked to suicidal and homicidal actions. Given the mass media's heavy dependence on drug company advertising, the role that psychiatric drugs may play in mass shootings is almost always downplayed in reportage on such events. The drugs aren't the only causative factor. Journalist and author John Rappaport observes, but they produce what I call the Johnny Appleseed effect throughout society. Sprinkle enough of the drugs among enough people and you get otherwise unexplainable violence popping up in schools, in workplaces. The psychiatric plague eats out the country from the inside. So again, I don't know what really happened at the Parkland School, but I think there's enough evidence out there that indicates that we may have been lied to, or that at the very least, we need to investigate more before accepting the official account of what happened there. And this article can be found on the website globalresearch.ca, posted on February 25th, 2018. And it's called Parkland School Shooting, Top 10 Reasons for Deeper Interrogation by James Tracy. And the great website globalresearch.ca is itself being attacked by the censors. And you can read about that at their website, globalresearch.ca. And now let's turn our focus to another topic that we know very little about, weather modification. To do this, you'll hear an audio clip from a 2012 interview between James Corbett of thecorbettreport.com and Michelle Chisadovsky, a Canadian professor and co-founder of the great website globalresearch.ca. This clip has been lightly edited, and here it is.
One day in Manhattan.
Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's the 1st of October, 2012, and today we're joined on the line once again by our old friend, Professor Michelle Chisadovsky of GlobalResearch.ca, all the way on the line from my home and native land of Canada. Professor Chisadovsky, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us again.
Delighted to be on the program.
All right. Well, tonight I wanted to start talking about a subject that is something that not a lot of people think of. It's not in the forefront of a lot of people's minds when we're talking about some of these events like warfare and the possibility of warfare in various parts of the globe. Something that not a lot of people have on their plate when it comes to that topic is the possibility of weather warfare and modification of the environment itself, climate, as a tool of warfare. And this is despite the fact that there's in fact a voluminous amount of detail that has been accrued over the years documenting the fact that weather warfare and climatic modification is very much a reality. So let's start talking about that. I know you've written about that extensively for globalresearch.ca. Perhaps we can talk about some of the documentation and some of the companies that are behind this climate modification agenda.
Well, first of all, I should mention that weather warfare is not something which is recent. It was used during the Vietnam War. Cloud seeding techniques which were intended to block enemy supply lines. But in the course of the 1990s, it has become increasingly sophisticated. And I'm referring to the development, what is called the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, HAARP, which is based in Gakona, Alaska, which is a system of high frequency antennas directed to the outer atmosphere, and which then can be used to trigger climatic instability in different parts of the world, as well as disrupt communication systems. We talk about NMOD, environmental modification techniques for military use. Now, these techniques of climatic modification are, if we can trust military documents and statements of the U.S. Air Force, they are fully operational. But there's absolutely no evidence. There are suspicions, of course. There's no evidence that these techniques have actually been applied. It's very difficult to actually test whether, you know, the activity of HAARP has led to particular climatic occurrences. But what is important to point out is that the United States, as well as Russia, have these capabilities, but particularly the United States, in relation to HAARP, and they have acknowledged that they intend to use these technologies of weather modification, which can trigger floods, hurricanes, droughts, earthquakes against enemies, namely, in the present context, Syria, Iran, North Korea, China, Russia, okay? And they explicitly state that these weather modification techniques have both offensive as well as defensive applications and can be used for deterrence purposes. In other words, we are in presence of something which is very diabolical. I consider this to be the ultimate weapon of mass destruction. Why? Because it can destroy the agricultural system. It can destabilize the national ecology, the environment. It can disrupt communications networks. It can destabilize an entire national economy. And in the present context of asymmetrical warfare and the use of non-conventional weapon systems, which has been proposed, in fact, by the U.S. administration, I would suspect that weather warfare is part of the agenda. Nobody talks about it. Unfortunately, scientists are absolutely mute on the subject. It is not part of the debate on climate change, although it is acknowledged that these techniques do disrupt climate. And ultimately, the scientific debate on owning the weather for military use, I'm using the terms of the U.S. Air Force. Those are not my terms. The U.S. Air Force says we must own the weather. We must own the weather so that we can use the weather for military purposes against enemies of the United States and the Western world. So that is the background.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about some of the documents that back this up and some of the technologies that are itself doing this. And in some of your writings, you go as far back as a U.S. mathematician, John von Neumann, who was writing about this as much as 70 years ago. So this is by no means a new concept and has been fleshed out in numerous documents, as you've been detailing. Why do you think it has been so much kept under wraps? And how are they able to maintain that level of secrecy over something that's been so out in the open for so long?
Well, I think there are two elements behind this. First of all, it's the nature of the weapon system itself. It is something which is covert in its application, so that when the HAARP antennas go into full swing and trigger a particular geopolitical area of the world, okay, or a particular country, nobody knows about it. It's reported as a flood, a drought. Nobody knows about it. And it is very difficult, even for scientists, to establish a link between the activity of the HAARP system of antennas on the one hand and a climatic occurrence at the other end of the world. There have been suspicions and there have been some very unusual patterns which have emerged. So it's the covert nature of this weapon system. And one assumes it is heavily integrated into covert operations and so on. It's not strictly a U.S. Air Force undertaking. And there's always the possibility of denial. Said, oh, yes, we've been attacked by HAARP. Now, how do you prove it? But on the other hand, there have been very few scientists which have had the courage to investigate that relationship. It's a very complex relationship, namely the activity of the antennas and climatic occurrences. And the reason, as I mentioned earlier, the reason is that the scientific community is in fact more or less kidnapped by the military-industrial complex. It does not want to voice any statements which could, of course, have far-reaching implications at the political, geopolitical level. I should mention that one of the most distinguished scientists, Rosalie Bertel, who recently passed away, she brought out this relationship, but in a very cautious way. So scientists are mum on the subject matter. Environmentalists do not, although they acknowledge the existence of climatic warfare. They have never inserted that into their discussion on global warming or climatic instability. And I should mention that in effect, there was a convention signed between various countries, but specifically between Russia and China, going back to 1977, which is a convention which bans the use of environmental modification techniques and recognizes their destructive applications. And at the 1992 Earth Summit, there was a reassertion of that basic protocol of 77 in the founding documents of the United Nations Framework for Climate Change. But in effect, it was not really mentioned. And in all subsequent venues pertaining to climate change, Kyoto, global warming, the issue of environmental modification techniques for military use is never mentioned. Instead, the environmentalists acknowledge the existence of these military technologies, but they are more concerned with CO2 emissions and their impact on global warming. And consequently, the whole debate on climate change, in effect, is somewhat complicit of the military agenda.
Afghanis in Afghanistan, Vietnamese in Vietnam, Iraqis in Iraqi land, we've bombed them all. White phosphorus and napalm too, bunker busters, daisy cutters, cruise missiles, B-52s, we bombed them all. For their prosperity, their freedom and democracy.
And again, you were just listening to a 2012 interview between James Corbett of thecorbettreport.com, he does really great work, and Michelle Chesedovsky of globalresearch.ca. So as you can see, ignoring weather modification when discussing climate change is really leaving out a vital, fundamental piece of information. And without it, the climate change debate is rather shallow. And as Michelle Chesedovsky said, plays into the hands of the military-industrial complex. So please keep researching and talking about all of these topics that the powers that be don't want us to know about. As the old refrain goes, knowledge is power. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.
Power to the people.